Hello, this is David Gawke, Head of Public Policy at McFarlane's, and welcome to the latest in our Policy in Practice podcasts, where we've got a series on Wednesday's Autumn Statement, hopefully bite-sized chunks where we discuss various aspects of what Jeremy Hunt was talking about in his Autumn Statement. And in our first session, I'm delighted to be joined by Rhiannon King-Hulware, who is Head of Tax Policy at McFarlane's. Hello, Rhiannon.
Hello.
So we are going to be talking about business taxes and what was announced, and perhaps taxes more generally, indeed, the state of the public finances, the state of the economy, and where this leaves the political parties. So, Rhiannon, an interesting set of measures. What did you make of them?
Thank you. Well, I wouldn't have said it's really a fiscal statement for the tax enthusiasts. It was certainly a political statement. Before I go into the details on the tax, David, why don't you tell us your thoughts on the state of the economy and where this leaves the public finances?
Well, yeah, no, I think it's, to be honest, quite a gloomy assessment all round, because yes, the Chancellor announced some tax cuts, and we'll talk about those in a moment. But if you look at the prospects for the economy on economic growth, in truth, the economy is going to be larger, according to these forecasts, than was predicted in March. And that's partly because the economy has already been revised up, and the last year has been better than the OBR expected. But for the next 3 years, growth is downgraded. Inflation is also higher than had previously been predicted. And there are plenty of headwinds for the economy, and you know, living standards aren't going to be improving at all for the foreseeable future. But that inflation actually does have some advantages for the economy, in that what is happening is that with frozen thresholds and allowances in the personal tax system, the tax revenue is rolling in. So this has given the Chancellor a bit of headroom. Truth be told, it's headroom because it's bringing more money in on tax. But if you ignore increased spending pressures, you get extra money. And you know, there's about essentially £20 billion taken off public spending in real terms as a consequence of this inflation, and essentially what the Chancellor has done has used that up in various tax cuts. We'll talk about those in a moment, but it does mean that not so much now, but when we get into the next Parliament, pressure on public spending is going to be pretty intense. And the OBR, the Office for Budget Responsibility, sort of flagged up one of the fiscal risks, is that the chances are that whoever is in government is going to be addressing those risks, is then is going to end up spending more money than is currently planned. So I mean, there's a lot of politics in what Jeremy Hunt did on Wednesday, and that's you know, pretty clear. And it has meant that there are significant pressures on the public finances for some time to come. It may be the economy will perform on the upside and there'll be a bit more money, but I'm not sure there's going to be scope for further tax cuts in the spring, although there's plenty of speculation that that was the case. But before we sort of start talking about what could happen in future, maybe we should focus on what's already happened. And Rhiannon, from a business perspective, in terms of what the Chancellor has set out, what stood out for you?
So, as I said, it wasn't really a fiscal statement for the tax enthusiast. A lot was trailed in advance. So unlike other years, there wasn't as much to look under the bonnet once the book was published with all of the detailed policy announcements. Obviously, the headline from a business perspective is that full expensing has now been made permanent. I think this will obviously be very welcome measure from businesses. And it's just a shame that the school card didn't allow it to be made permanent at the outset. It was obviously introduced the last fiscal event on a temporary basis. But in terms of what this means for companies, especially in light of the higher rate of corporation tax that's gone up to 25%, companies can get immediate relief on the investments that they make in certain plant and machinery. And there's also a 50% allowance that's been made permanent for integral features in buildings and long life assets that had ordinarily, before these announcements, that they'd only qualified for 6% writing down allowances. So I think overall, obviously positive, and especially in light of that much higher rate of corporation tax, something was needed to reduce the base of which profits were taxed. We can also expect, I think, further changes or certainly some simplification of capital allowances. There's a hint of a technical consultation and also a working group focused on leased assets. So there's a little bit more work that will also be underway around capital allowances.
I suppose what you could say, though, is I mean, we'll talk about NICs in a moment, but this is helping businesses, but it's in the context of corporation tax rates having gone up a lot. And businesses are still going to be paying more in corporation tax than they were before those changes happened.
Yeah, certainly the projections are that there'll be quite a bounty from corporation tax receipts. And it obviously reverses a strategy that was close to your heart that focused on obviously reducing the rate of corporation tax and broadening the base. We now have a much higher rate of corporation tax. And despite the move on capital allowances, we still have a much broader base. So corporation tax receipts will be doing quite a lot of heavy lifting for the public finances.
Yes, as you say, close to my heart. And I, for one, was not hugely thrilled to hear the announcement of the increase in corporation tax rates done a couple of years or so ago. One area where we've been doing a lot of work and you've been doing a lot of work has been on the international cooperation on corporate taxes and Pillar 2. So have we got an update on that as well?
So there's no let up on the Pillar 2 implementation of introducing a global minimum tax. I think anyone was going to be very optimistic if they thought the government might delay this agenda this close to it coming into effect. So for accounting period starting on or after the 31st of December 2023, so the end of this year, businesses will need to be ready for the top-up tax. That said, despite that pending deadline and despite the UK government's issuance of legislation at a very early stage compared to other jurisdictions, there are still details unfolding. And so there's a little more detail and some further updates to the Finance Bill and also indeed the Finance Act that introduces the new top-up tax for the UK. And in addition to the top-up tax, the government has also taken to implement the under-tax payment rule, which is seen as a backstop rule for Pillar 2. And that's been confirmed to take effect from the for accounting period beginning on or after 31st of December 2024. Draft legislation was already published actually in the summer, so we had some indication that the government was moving ahead with that. But they've obviously confirmed the date and have now actually booked some revenue, which they're expecting by 2028-29 to bring in just shy of £500 million, which that, to my mind, feels quite high, especially given that this rule is seen as a backup rule and should only really come into play when, say, the top-up tax isn't being collected by parent jurisdiction because they haven't implemented the minimum tax. And so actually over time, you would expect more countries to have implemented, and that would actually diminish the role that the under-tax payment rule has to play. But the government does actually think that it will get some revenue from this and actually increasing towards the end of the scorecard. So it'll be interesting to understand a little bit more about their projections in that regard. And I think linked to the Pillar 2 work, one major win for simplification is that the government has actually decided to repeal some legislation. So the offshore receipts in respect of intangible property, ORIP, that has been abolished. And I think this is really positive that the government, HMRC, Treasury is confident that the Pillar 2 rules and some of the other base protection measures can actually sufficiently tackle some of the avoidance that these measures were introduced. But I think it is really unusual to actually see the repeal. We normally see quite a cautious approach. So I'd expected a lot of these rules just to sit on the statute book indefinitely. So there might be more of this to come. And I think it goes to the point we're obviously dealing with the announcement of the Office of Tax Simplification closing. And Treasury and HMRC have said that they are going to be looking at tax simplification. And I think that this is a good example, and they might look to identify more obsolete rules in the future.
Very good. And on the subject of tax simplification, I suppose one issue not really directly related to business, but of course, reforms of national insurance contributions. And there's a simplification there in terms of the abolition of Class 2 NICs, which was something I can remember looking at when I was in the Treasury some years ago. And they've actually finally done it. It's in the context of cuts in employees and self-employed national insurance contributions. I thought an interesting one. Usually you expect, so if you're going to cut personal taxes, it's income tax, because people are much more aware of income tax, more conscious of it, it's more politically sensitive. But they've cut NICs. That means they can do it early, which is interesting. And also, when he was making his speech, I thought Jeremy Hunt was going to be cutting self-employed NICs by more than employees' NICs when he announced the scrapping of Class 2 and then a reduction by 1% of Class 4. But in fact, with the 2p cut in employee NICs, it depends where you are on the income spectrum, but if anything, they're sort of slightly narrowing the gap between the two, which was something that the Treasury has been trying to do for a very long time, and reduce the preferential treatment of the self-employed within the NIC system. So I thought that was an interesting policy announcement, and interestingly political as well.
Yes, and as you say, one that they could bring in early so people can feel it in their back pocket. Although, just one point on the timing, the cut on the employee Class 1 NICs comes into effect from January, but actually the reductions on the self-employed side don't start until April. So there is a small delay for the self-employed before they see the benefits.
No, very good point. I mean, NICs is done on a weekly basis, but it gets more complicated, I think, for the self-employed as they do their tax returns and so on. So that's the reason for that. But I know that I think certainly my initial reaction when he announced it was going to start from January was keen to show some benefits sooner rather than later. Does this mean a May general election? I don't know what your thoughts on that were, Rhiannon.
I guess it's incredibly uncertain. There'll be a lot of politics at play, and certainly the state of the economy will be a factor in any decision. I guess, yeah, David, you can probably share some thoughts on where this autumn statement leaves us in terms of the politics and, as you say, that chance of an early election.
Well, it does seem to me that they're keeping their options open. I mean, frankly, if the Labour lead in the opinion polls is anything like what it is at the moment, and we're in late March, I don't see there being any chance that, or much of a chance, that Rishi Sunak would go to the country in those circumstances. But if things got better politically for the Conservative Party, and that gap had been substantially closed, given that the NICs cut for most people, for employed people, would have already been in place, given that actually there are potential problems down the line for the country, the economy doesn't look as if it's going to be performing particularly well through 2024, I'm a bit sceptical that there's going to be much firepower for a tax-cutting March budget. You just wonder whether they would go early. As I say, I still think it'll be the autumn because I don't think the polls will close enough for Rishi Sunak's liking. Why bring your premiership to an end when something might turn up over the next few months? But there's no doubt that in the Westminster world, there's much more speculation about a May election than there was in advance of that autumn statement. And as I say, that moment when he announced that the employees' NICs changes were going to take effect in January, I think a lot of eyebrows were raised and immediately the speculation went into overdrive that the election might be sooner rather than later. Of course, it sometimes helps a government to have that speculation running. It keeps backbenchers a bit more disciplined than they would otherwise be. And perhaps it puts a little bit more pressure on the opposition. But as I say, I think simple self-interest would suggest wait until the autumn. Very good. Well, on all of that, Rhiannon, thank you very much for your company. As I say, this is the first of three podcasts we're doing on Wednesday's Autumn Statement. Thank you for tuning in to the latest in our Policy in Practice podcasts. And do join us for our other sessions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.